This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Back to your phones. Pete and Essex, thoughts on the Bruins last night. How you feeling, Pete?
Not good, but everybody's mad at the wrong people. You know, the last four games, the Leafs have outscored us by 3, 12-9. Krug's a -5, and he's been on the ice for 8 of the last 12 Toronto goals. Oof. He plays 23 to 25 minutes a night. I think he's been exposed by a dynamic offensive team. This is why I wanted Toronto and Tampa Bay to play, so that you'd only have to play one of these two teams. He's exposed for he can't play defense. And this Babcock knows it, and they are all over Torey Krug. The other people that the last three losses, are you aware that Marchand is a -7 with
yes.
no points?
Yes.
Bergeron, no points. Pastrnak, no points. All minuses. You can blame Tuukka Rask, but what is the man supposed to do?
I'm not blaming Tuukka Rask. I don't know how many times I have to say that.
I understand you're not, but people, that's the name that's coming off people's lips. There should be other names. This is a team effort to suck this bad.
You got it. Let's look at some other names.
Add Charlie McAvoy to the list.
Torey Krug, but let's just start with Torey Krug. That's a good one.
Yes, it is a good one. And but again, like to me, you know his vulnerabilities. You know they're there, and anybody who's smart will exploit them. But no question, he's on the list, absolutely.
It was clear after those first two games, the key to the series was going to be what Toronto does against your first line. And since then, the first two games, here are the numbers. First two games, the Marchand, Pastrnak, Bergeron line. The first two games, they combined for 20 points and were plus 18. In their last three games together, which is not the three most previous games, because remember, Bergeron missed game 4. They won that game. In their last three games together, they are combined 0 points minus 16. In their last three games together, Marchand is 0-0-0 minus 7. Pastrnak is 0-0-0 minus 5. Bergeron is 0-0-0 minus 4.
I'll tell you, of those three, the ones I'm most disappointed in are Marchand and Bergeron. Pastrnak, to me, has been okay. Like, you know, they've muscled him, there's no question, but he's gotten some good chances. He's been a little snake bit. Like, but Pastrnak's been okay. I mean, he's been most like himself of that group. But the other thing is, and there's probably an injury there, okay? Bergeron is, for him, borderline invisible.
Silent. No question.
I mean, borderline invisible.
Nick and Peabody, go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing? Now, I knew the Bruins were in trouble the last game of the regular season versus the Panthers. They couldn't beat them. That's when I knew it was all over. They're going to lose game 7, and Rask needs to be put out of here.
Okay, if they do lose another Game 7 at home in front of Tuukka Rask, and his numbers stay what they are, which is in these games below .900 save percentage, I mean, doesn't something have to give?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if they go to a record of 6-15 in elimination games in front of Tuukka Rask, doesn't either the goalie or the people in front of him have to change? And something in that mix has to change, doesn't it?
Sure.
You just can't keep throwing that same dynamic out there.
See, but, well, it is changing. It's going to change because they're becoming a younger team. So that part of it's going to change. To me, that question then becomes about the goalie. Like, even if you do change some of the pieces in front of him, do you believe in him?
I mean, again, given these numbers, I guess it's hard to. Drew and Peabody, go ahead, Drew.
Hey, guys. So we spoke the other day, I said, I think it was after game 2, in regards to pulling out Heinen, and it's Drew and Peabody, not Nick, but whatever, about getting rid of Heinen and having Donato come out, and you guys were, you know, oh, well, we don't need the points. Going into Toronto's building and all these things, clearly you need the points. I mean, it's, and then as far as Rask, I don't know why he was ever, when they pulled him, and Hudobin came in, he made several great stops, didn't let in any points. Why now is he not continuing to be able to play?
Well, because Rask's the better goalie, and he's the guy. So no one's getting that silly about bringing in Hudobin. No one's saying that. It's time for Rask and the team to perform the way they're capable of in one of these games that really matter at home, that they should win. It's just time for them all to perform that way, from the goalie on out. What was the first thing they said? Oh, so, like, I sort of came to... I wanted Donato in the lineup over Wingles to begin the series. But I sort of came to grips with it over the course of the series that Wingles was just a better fit. But that's when Wingles was playing on the fourth line and was playing in that third or fourth line capacity. Wingles with Krejci? I'm sorry, that didn't work. And there were several opportunities where Wingles was set up with something pretty good and he couldn't do anything with it. And Wingles just doesn't belong up there. So you want to put Wingles in the lineup, that's fine. But he's got to play in that third, fourth line kind of role because that's what he is. He doesn't belong up there with Krejci. And, you know, and I don't mind moving Rick Nash down. I thought moving Rick Nash down worked. So, look, if you want to take out Heinen and move Wingles there, like, I'm okay with that. Just don't give me that on the second line. That ain't going to help your offense.
I just think Krejci's going to need someone with some real size with him, though. And DeBrusk's not small, don't get me wrong.
He plays big, too.
Yeah, but you know, like, it wouldn't kill me to see Donato and Nash with Krejci in the next game.
Andrew in Brighton, hi.
Hey, boys. I've been thinking that DeBrusk has been the best forward for the Bruins aside from those top boys in the first round, in the first game. So I'd like to see him maybe with Donato and Krejci because I think that combination could finally get some offense going for Krejci because he's just been invisible, really, these first couple
sorry,
games.
I'm sorry.
Him with that group. You know, that group just has to finish. They got to finish. You know, Marchand had a couple of chances in that game last night. One early in the game that trickled off the post, and the other one that went off of the glove or the shoulder or whatever it was.
So
Anderson.
I'm glad you point out, there was some luck there with Anderson.
Absolutely.
Marchand beat him clean 5-hole. And not clean, it just ticked off the inside of his leg and just missed the post, I think.
Yeah, so he didn't catch a break there.
Yeah.
So to me, there's still enough chances there with that line. You know, where you say, I'm not taking that line apart. I'm not making the change there. To me, it starts at, it's the middle two lines. Because the fourth line, they've been fine. They've been pretty good. They're giving you what you expect, and they've actually produced some goals here in the last few games. I got no issue with that group either.
You shouldn't. Cam and Taunton, hi.
I don't know how you could possibly have faith in it. It's like, here we go again. You get another big lead in the series, more than one game. You go out in game five, give up a goal within the first. I guarantee you anything that they'll be down a goal within the first 10 minutes tomorrow night. Then they'll have some chances in the first period. Don't convert any of them. Give up another goal in the second period. Wake up for the third period, but it's too late. That is just the path of this team. And Mike, stop sugarcoating it. It's not a choky team. It's a choking team. They had their day in 2011. Like you said, every dog has their day, so they're not quite the Capitals or the Sharks. I hope I'm wrong, and I'm going to be rooting for them that I'm wrong, but I have absolutely zero faith if they're going to win tomorrow night. None.
I just say it's a little strong to call them choking dogs.
I appreciate that disgust, though, because that's how I felt last night.
Oh, and you can just feel it coming and building. I don't know how people didn't take that season-ending loss more seriously.
I didn't. Shame on me.
Like, why did everyone just blame the schedule? It was just a one-off game against a team that had nothing to play for. And could have set you up tremendously.
Because the overall bigger sample size was they looked like, you know, these weren't your father's Bruins.
It's a regular season sample size. It doesn't translate.
Cassidy knew it, too. He knew it. He didn't like the way that looked. He knew it. You go back and listen to his voice after that game. He knew. He knew. He said, deep down, he recognized it was a bad sign. You know, look, that said, they did come out of a cannon in games one and two. Right, so they looked a lot better. Game one in particular, I thought they looked great in the early going of that. You know, game two snowballed, and Toronto quit at the end of both of those games, for crying out loud. But what has happened since? I mean, can we get someone who can shoot the puck in the net? Can they do that, please?
Eddie and Derry, hi.
Jesus!
Edward. Eddie? Okay, babe, you can call us back. You know the number. Our buddy Matthew's in Framingham. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, Maz, I mean, Rask did steal your four. You know, Anderson, he's been solid 5 and 6. Was anyone surprised? I mean, this is deja vu. I could have predicted this. As soon as they went ahead and they tied within 30 seconds, I knew it wasn't our night. But I think the biggest game, however, just like last year, was actually the last game of the regular season. When Rask didn't show up and we lost to a team that isn't even in the playoffs and we would instead be playing the Devils and we would have easily gotten out of that first round. And okay, yeah, maybe we would have seen Toronto again. But that's what Boston needs more than anything is to get around under their belt. So that was big. That game, it's just like last year.
No question, but Matt, when you say, is anyone surprised, did you hear how many people have said this is a different team? Murray, I'm looking right at one. This is a different team. They proved it over 82. That was the Florida game was all about the schedule. This is a different team. They've proven it time and time again. This is a different group. This isn't your father's Bruins. Da-da-da-da-da. So there better be a ton of people surprised. You all thought it was over 3-1 coming back home. You all thought it was over. Just forgetting what's just unfortunately in the DNA of this team a little bit.
Oh, I did. Like, after those first two games, the way that they looked, and, you know, to use Maz's words, shot out of a cannon, I was like, oh, we're going to be looking at five games at mess. We could even be looking at a sweep. Now, here I am, MFing my TV for an hour straight last night in that third period. I'm like, I can't believe it. Mike was right. Damn him. They're the same choky-ish kind of Bruins that I've grown up watching my whole life.
Okay, and I'm not picking...
With no offensive identity anymore.
I'm not, I don't want to hear this tomorrow, Thursday, you know, if and when the Bruins win. I'm not picking against them in Game 7.
Yeah,
I'm
this
not,
series isn't over yet.
And I'm not telling you Rask is going to suck. I can't predict what he's going to do. His track record isn't good in these spots. That's the fact. His track record is not good in these spots. Fact, not opinion. But that does not that doesn't mean it's predictive. So maybe he's better tomorrow night. Maybe they're better tomorrow night. Maybe they are a different team, Murray, and they just prove it tomorrow night, and they were stringing us along. I'm just telling you, how do you feel today? And I don't know how there weren't more warning bells after that Florida game, because that should have been a layup. There's a lot at stake there. And they sort of look the way they've looked in these spots over the years.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Blend force drum!
Gonna run him right down their throat!
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Middleton backs Larkin down. Pump fake steps through two men and floats it off the window and in.
That's a great throw move. Oh, no!
Throwaway in the inbound. Dellavedova flips it up and in to beat the buzzer. Marcus Morris took his eyes off Shane Larkin, rolled the ball onto the floor. Dellavedova pounced on it. Bledsoe zips it for the trailer. Giannis left-hand slam, and the Bucks lead by 20. Shane Larkin, left-hand dribble, going to go under the shoulder of Maker. He slips and falls, but he's able to throw it to the corner where Morris elevates and hits a three.
Slip, slide, and away.
Morris, left-hand dribble down the left side, gets near the rim, puts it off the window and in, and game four is dead even with 9 minutes to go. Ooh. Shot clock down to four. Rozier returns it to Tatum, has to take a deep straightaway three, and that son of a gun ripped it right through the middle.
Oh, my goodness. This is a young player who had no fear.
Brogdon attacks Horford.
No!
Giannis flies around Horford, throws it hard with the right hand down over Al Horford. Jaylen Brown, end of the shot clock. Brown against Brogdon. Right hand dribble. He shakes off Thon Maker.
No!
And sticks the three. The net doesn't even move. Brogdon for three. Got it! Offensive rebound is tapped up and in. Just the second offensive rebound of the day, and it's Giannis Antetokounmpo who gives Milwaukee the lead. Lobbed across court. Morris will catch it. 4 seconds to go. Morris against Middleton. Elevates. Baseline jumper. No good, and the Bucks win game four. A decent look, not a great look, but the Milwaukee Bucks have survived, and the Bradley Center lives to see another day.
Morris got up a really good look. Feel really good about that with 5 seconds left in a game. You know, the goal of that is to get both guys on one side, and Brogdon did a good job staying under Al. You always have the option of going one-on-one there on the other side with nobody there, which is not the worst thing in the world either.
So there's the Celtics. Look at their Game 4 loss in Milwaukee the other day. They're back at it. Game 5 tonight at the Garden, which is where we come to you from our Star Market Studios at the Garden. We've been hitting on the Bruins in the NFL draft. Now, let's just turn our attention a little bit to the Celts tonight. Maz, what do you think? What are your expectations?
Well, look, I think Marcus Smart's going to play. It feels like it's trending that way. That's a good sign. And to me, must win. You got to get this win. Given the way the series went in Milwaukee, I'm not sure either team can win on the other team's floor. So I would expect the borderline guys on the Celtics to play better in this game and the borderline role guys on the Bucks to play worse. So I'm not going to tell you who's going to win the game. I'm just saying if the Celtics lose this, it's over.
Well, no. See, this is don't treat this like a NHL playoff hockey game where you have no clue. The Celtics are heavily favored and should win this game.
They should.
With Smart back, they're going to win this game. They'll have their defensive identity back and not a moment too soon, because how many times on Sunday, especially in that second half, Celtics score, Milwaukee goes right back down the floor uncontested, and they scored pretty much every time, especially like guys like Terry Rozier, who are defensive liabilities. Having Smart back tonight is going to be a factor.
I'm not convinced.
Brad can tighten up the rotation.
This is a different. This is a game you have to predict. You can't go into a NBA playoff game in the first round.
Okay, you want me to predict? I'll predict the Bucks.
Thank you. You can't say like if you want to go to a game 7 of an NHL playoff game between two even teams. Yes, toss up. Anything can happen. Don't tell me anything can happen in this thing.
I like the Bucks.
Okay, tell me why.
Because I think ultimately they're deeper and they're more athletic, and the Celtics are running on five or six guys. And if Smart can come back and have an impact, I might change my mind. Like, but, you know, he hasn't played in how long? All of a sudden he's going to come out and play great? So I would lean Bucks in this game. I think those two games in Milwaukee were revealing. I mean, again, they dominated the first halves of both of those games.
All right, so you're probably not going to get anything offensively from Marcus Smart, but rarely do you anyway. But defensively, him on Chris Middleton, you don't think that's going to be a factor?
Depending on, again, what kind of wins he going to have.
He could do it with one hand.
Yeah, maybe.
It'd be a pain in the ass with no hands.
Maybe.
That guy.
So, look, I after watching the Celtics in those games in Milwaukee, I'm a little alarmed. I am. I'm a little alarmed. I feel like they should be able to win this series. I felt that way going in. But, man, those first halves were bad. And the Bucks did to them what I thought they would, which is put a little more pressure on the ball. And the Celtics run the shot clock deep. And if they're not making some three by Brown or Tatum on the outside, they're not scoring. And so I just feel like ultimately, if Milwaukee stays at its level, the Bucks are going to win the series. And I mean that emotionally and investment.
Is that a underachievement for the Celtics? Is that something to be unhappy with?
I think so.
A little bit. Yep. A little bit.
Why? Yeah, even with all the injuries. I said, look, with the progression that you saw from guys like Tatum and Brown, especially the way they've played in this series, and I've been told time and again that Brad Stevens is the second best coach, if not the best coach in the NBA. I don't care how undermanned you are. You're better than the Bucks as the whole team. I mean, yeah, they have the superstar in Antetokounmpo, but you should win this series, even undermanned. So, yeah, that's a disappointment to me. I said it going into it. If they lose in the first round, it's a disappointment. Whether it was going to be the Bucks, Miami, Washington, I would have given you.
What are the stakes? If they lose it, what do they lose?
I don't think they lose a ton, but I think there's an opportunity to gain something. And when I say they don't lose a ton, they're still getting Irving back.
But
they're still getting Hayward back. Tatum and Brown are going to be better players as a result of this. So I think there's still some draw for someone to say, yeah, Boston lost, but if they win, and you know, if they could actually get to the conference final, and they do it with Rozier and Morris and the two kids, I think someone might look there and go, good God, they reached the conference final without Kyrie and Hayward. They could win it now.
And to me, what do they lose? I think Stevens takes a hit. You're up two games to none.
I was going to say, if they go to the conference finals with this group, Stevens really does look like a real difference maker, doesn't he? If they lose in the first round to the Bucks,
up 2-0?
Huh.
Come on.
Sort of another guy.
Yeah.
You know, a good NBA coach.
Coached by Joe Prunty?
You know, but even not that. No one would ever say that. But they'd say...
Well, they defensively at the end of that game, on the play that he had called up, winner. You know, they knew it was coming.
Bucks knew it were coming. So that, to me, is the biggest upset of the series so far, that the Bucks actually knew it was coming. Had matched wits, like, were there mentally.
But it's just proof that if you have the better athletes and they're invested, you're going
to
lose.
Okay, so that's right. That's what that does to the Stevens thing, is that he's, you know, good coach. Certainly a good coach, but... It really is about the players in that league, and the coach is not going to make that big of a difference.
I mean, the block shots to me in that series, in the two games in Milwaukee is what I mean, were eye-opening. Like, and Maker is now a factor coming off the bench, but between, you know, Greek the Freak, Thon Maker, like, they got guys
even
who are going to swat.
Even Dellavedova's made a difference since he's been put into the lineup.
But he's talking about block shots.
Yeah, these guys are swatting balls out of the air. The Celtics don't have... the athletes to contend with some of that. They don't. And I'm disappointed because I look at the first two games of the series and Milwaukee wanted to give them game four. They did. They wanted to give it to them.
Definitely.
And so it was there and they had it and it slipped through their fingers. And so now look, there's every chance the Bucks will come out tonight and puke on themselves. I'm just telling you that I think Milwaukee's now get some confidence and it feels to me like the Bucks know they can ramp it up, especially when they're on defense, and force the Celtics into mistakes and get transition, and that's going to be a problem.
To me, these stakes are also, just from an entertainment standpoint and sort of a tone-setting standpoint, it deprives us of Philly-Boston in that next round, and I think that's a really fun series. And I think neither team is playing for a championship, but it really is. I mentioned this the other day, and I keep mentioning it. You know, Philly's really feeling it, too. Like, they're talking now, and Embiid and these guys are talking about we don't need anybody else. We're talking about the free agency stuff. They're going to have a ton of cap room. Supposed to be a destination for LeBron James. These guys are coming out and saying, we don't need them. We don't need those guys. We have enough. The time is now. I mean, they're really feeling it, which is sort of odd for just being up 3-1 against Miami. It's not like, what have you really accomplished? But that's a team on the come. There's no question about it. And it should be you and them for the next however long. I mean, I don't know what team in the East you tell me over the long haul has that kind of future like you and Philly. And that's just a great historical sort of matchup. Two great young teams. Not their time, but this will be round one of what we think will be, you know, half a dozen of these. And I would really look forward to that.
Oh, it's a glimpse of tomorrow. It totally is that. And if look, if Smart can come back and impact this series and the Celtics can win it, and you end up with Celtics and Sixers with Smart involved?
The Celts are winning this, Mass. The Celts are winning this.
Yeah, I'm not convinced. The Milwaukee games are just
they are not going to let the Bucks walk in here and beat them in any of these games. If you want to tell me it goes seven, maybe, because that's just the way these things go, but please.
Yeah, I don't
the
love
attitude you're that next series would be awesome though. It would be
awesome.
If you thought this Heat series with the Sixers has been chippy, this next one with Morris and what a badass he is and Smart, and now Ben Simmons carries himself as the bad guy, it'd be great.
Felger and Maz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Maz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
Oop, got someone on the bottom.
It's all right, you got one.
I got one.
Jake Biquette from Arkansas.
Okay.
If they pick a Z receiver, it's going to be Aaron Dobson out of Marshall.
With the 59th pick in the 2013 NFL draft, the New England Patriots select Aaron Dobson, wide receiver, Marshall.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Oh, wow!
What does that mean, Maz? Is that good or is that bad?
Oh, I heard rumors about him.
What kind of rumors?
That he was on their radar.
With the 67th pick in the 2014 NFL draft, your New England and my New England Patriots select Jimmy Garoppolo.
Trey Flowers out of Arkansas.
Number 101 overall, the New England Patriots select Trey Flowers, defensive end from Arkansas.
God!
Cyrus Jones from Alabama.
Oh, Nick Saban connection.
He's projected as a fourth-round pick.
With the 60th selection, the New England Patriots select Cyrus Jones.
Jacoby Brissett.
Oh, God.
North Carolina State projects as a fourth-round pick.
If his name's Jacoby Soft,
that guy has no shot.
The New England Patriots here at number 91, Jacoby Brissett, a quarterback.
All right, here we go again. Felger and Maz Big Board, a draft week tradition. We think pre-draft analysis is as dumb as it gets, so we said, you know what, we can do just as good a job chucking markers at a draft magazine. And we hit someone just about every year. Last year we missed, but they only picked four players. And so I think we give ourselves a little bit of a mulligan last year. Pretty much the Felger and Maz Big Board comes through to the point where it's become a big-time sponsorship, as it should be. This year's draft board. Sponsored by the experts at the Peterson School, who train their students on Carrier, who are the experts at home heating and cooling. If you're watching the NBC Sports Boston simulcast, where we beam across New England and the country. Sorry, Maz. There you go. Get your markers, kid. You see the Felger Maz Big Board, again, brought to you by the Peterson School and Carrier. Turn to the experts. We've already yesterday picked the defensive line, offensive tackles, and offensive guards. We got the big fatties out of the way. For example, the big board wants you to take a look at Harold Landry, the kid out of BC. He made the Felger Maz big board yesterday. At the offensive tackle position, keep an eye on Brandon Parker from North Carolina A&T. We also hit on Isaiah Wynn, a guard out of Georgia, who I think has some position versatility and maybe will be a factor there as well. So today, linebackers and defensive backs. This segment, we'll do linebackers, okay? And then we'll do... Is there any way that mic reaches right there, Maz? Just see, I like to hear you guys. Your commentary is crucial to the nonsense here.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
All right, here we go.
All right, so these guys are standing across the room. They're holding highlighter markers. I'm holding the board on the back. If you see the back here again on the simulcast, hold on, Murray. This is like the back of a big charity check that we gave to someone, so it's a little busy. You got to make a mark so I can tell exactly where it hits. Okay, buddy?
All right,
Murray, go. He throws the weakest sauce. So you hit this corner right here.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to go. Well, then we'll give it to him. It's Malik Jefferson. Malik Jefferson. Again, this is linebacker Malik Jefferson. He's 6'2", 240. He projects in the second or third round. In our view, and again, this is the Lindy Sports Annuals. In our view, Jefferson moved from a traditional Mike linebacker position under Charlie Strong to a hybrid rover linebacker spot last season in defensive coordinator Todd Orlando's multiple scheme, posting 110 tackles and earning Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year honors. All right? Yeah.
Red Rover, send Malik right over.
He's a C-ball get linebacker. I'm sorry. He's a C-ball get ball linebacker. Murray can relate to that. C-ball get ball. LB and a guesser. Oh, he's a guesser.
Oh, like Jamie Collins. That worked out well for him.
What? You'll beat that out of him.
When he guesses correctly or has a clear runway, he looks like coaching tape, but when he's guessing wrong, it negates his athleticism and leads to positive plays for the offense. But either way, Malik Jefferson of Texas will be on the Felger and Maz big board. Maz, I'll keep it on this page. You have another crack at the linebacker position.
Okay, here we go.
That felt pretty good.
Upper left.
Got her. Okay, Leighton Vander Esch. Leighton Vander Esch.
He's the kid from Boise.
From Boise State, correct. Strengths. He looks the part of a modern NFL linebacker, shows very good key and diagnosis skills, frequently taking steps towards the direction of the play even before the snap. His weaknesses. He can improve his awareness and technique to avoid cut blocks, while generally showing impressive body control for his size. Vander Esch can get greedy, lunging at ball carriers rather than breaking down.
They'll beat that out of him.
Injury concerns, too. I think he played like 6 games 2 years ago. It's going to be Andy Katz.
No, there's value there. Oh, there's value.
The big cat? You want linebacker? You know what Belichick called Katz and Moyer internally? His nickname was the big cat, right? Not to Bill. He was the big dog. Okay. So, Vander Esch, either way, put him on the board. One more shot, Murray. Would you really huck the thing, please? Oh!
There's a big orange.
The big orange thing right down here. Like, can you be farther from this thing? Darius Leonard, South Carolina State, Maz.
Oh, I like him.
Okay. In our view, according to Lindy's, Leonard, who spent most of his career at weak side linebacker in a 4-2-5 base. 4-2-5. Flows well and was routinely in the right place at the right time on tape. He wins more with hustle than know-how at this point of his career.
We like hustlers, though.
Weaknesses.
He's playing in a nickel, too.
He's 6'2", 229, so they say he's lanky with questionable growth potential. What does that mean? He won't get on the program?
He's flaccid.
Like, well, how could you not have growth potential? You stop. He struggles to tackle in motion, over-pursuing shifty ball carriers. He has a bad habit of waiting on his heels, Maz, allowing runners to set up moves. He flows with the action, easily falling for fakes and misdirection. He needs to expand his vision to spot blocks. All right, we'll give you one more, Chuck, because this is such an important position.
Same page.
Go ahead. We'll see if Vinny picked this one out as well. Go ahead. Chuck it.
I'd say second page, top of the first column.
Okay. Nick DeLuca. Nick DeLuca's North Dakota State, projected in the fourth round. He was a key part of 4 FCS national championships in his 5 seasons in Fargo. A 3-down Mike linebacker in the 4-3 base, DeLuca has terrific diagnose and flow skills. Weaknesses, lack of speed is clear on tape, not closing the gap in pursuit. He's a stiff mover.
It's good. That's what we want, is a slow stiff.
Stiff mover, especially when attempting to change directions at top speed. He allows ball carriers to outpace him to the edge, losing contain.
How's this guy even in the magazine if he sucks?
Sounds like he can't run.
Nick DeLuca. He sounds like the guy that works at my deli.
Sounds perfect, actually.
We know he's got the deals.
Yeah, his family owns a market.
Stu, that's horrible.
Oh.
He's a stiff mover. Stiff, so he got some slow stiff in the middle.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's good. He's stiff. The other guy's flaccid.
We got 4 names for you there. Put those on the board. You want to weigh in on the Patriots and the latest with Gronkowski and Brady, by all means. Want to weigh in on the Celtics tonight, by all means. We've been a lot of Bruins in your reaction to last night and going into Game 7. We will continue with your phones on all of those items at 617-779-0985 right after these words.
You're listening to Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
One, we're playing a really good team in Boston. The series is fun. It's high-end. There's no room. They got high-end players. But we think we're going to win. And so we thought that all along. We started poorly. and we've crawled our way back, and now you have an opportunity of a lifetime. And that's what we talked about tonight. This is fun. This is where you want to be. Going in the third period, this is fun. This is where you want to be. You want to be in these moments in your life. You don't remember everything in your life. What you do is you remember moments. You remember, and you want to create those moments. You want to create memories. Here's an opportunity for us to create memories with a good group of guys, like each other a lot, play hard for one another. We had a good regular season. We want to have a good playoff. So now we've got to go to Boston, get the clam chowder like I talked about, and then got to dig in and win a game.
I just like, you know, you can see what the appeal in him is as a big game, you know, as a big-time coach.
Well, so this is what I was saying. I mean, we could, I mean, we can make fun of the way he talks if you want, but he sort of scares me in this because he's been around the block and then some, and I think he's got some wisdom there for the guys, and he is sort of at this stage in his life where, you know, I think he can sort of talk like that, where he's accomplished so much. He's won a cup. He's won gold medals. He's the most decorated coach currently in the sport, I think. And he's, you know, at the later on in his career, and I think that's sort of a dangerous spot to be in. I think you can really impart that to your players, and even what he said right there. I mean, it's just true from a life standpoint. It's about creating memories and creating moments, and these moments you don't get them very often, and all that sort of philosophical stuff. Like, I think there's some value there of having Mike Babcock in that room with that young team for that game tomorrow.
See, I was just going to say, and he fits the team well because they need that. They got a young team, you know, so you need a guy who can sort of walk in there and say, hey, you know, we'll have some chowder. We'll go out and make a memory. Here we go. And then just kind of keep everybody, you know, bring them down a notch if they need to be brought down.
And I think Cassidy's going to be coming up from a much different place. He's proven himself. He's still trying to make his mark and become the coach that Babcock became. And, you know, Cassidy's never won a playoff series, never mind gold medals and Stanley Cups and all of that. And, you know, I don't think Bruce is in a position. He's just doesn't have the experience or worldview or he just hasn't been around to do it the way Mike Babcock does it. And I think, I don't know, I just when it comes to that, purely in a vacuum, I'd rather have Mike Babcock's situation than Cassidy's. Nothing you can do about it, but I think Babcock's valuable in that situation.
I do like Cassidy's temperament, though. Like, I don't feel like he is completely flipped out when things have gone wrong, and I don't feel like he's gotten too geeked up when things have gone right. Like, he does feel to me like he pretty much tells it like it is and moves on to the next one. And so, I mean, to me, he's carried himself in a good way, better than I thought based on the end of last year, because I thought at end of last year he was a little too blunt. And maybe it was just a contrast to Claude at the time, that it was just such a stark difference that you couldn't believe what was coming out of his mouth. He's a pretty straight shooter, it feels like. And so, you know, to me, as a player on that Bruins team, if you can't look at him and respect the fact that he's giving you an honest assessment, then you probably don't belong in the league.
So, you know, what's your confidence level in your team going to Game 7? You know, I say, I don't know if you're a Bruins fan, I don't know how you could possibly be confident. You could think they're going to win, but how could you be confident given their track record? If you're a Leafs fan, you probably feel worse because their track record's even worse. You know, like they have a generational history of losing and choking. So maybe you do feel worse up there. But just the recent history for the Bruins, again, not good. Since the start of the 2008 season, the Bruins are 4-5 in Game 7s, including 3 of 4 on home ice. This is from Matt Dolef on our website. But remember, 3 of those 4 wins came in one season, 2011, under Tim Thomas. So if you take out those 3 wins, they're 1-5 in Game 7s since the start of 2008. 1-5. Since hoisting that cup in Vancouver, the Bruins are 1-2 in Game 7s, all at home. And that only win? The miracle comeback against the Leafs, in which they need to score 3 times in the final 5 minutes to pull that game out.
And that was a miracle.
So they have not been good in this situation. They have not been good in front of Tuukka Rask in this situation. And that, again, is just the fact. NBC threw up a similar graphic last night if you watched the NBC broadcast. Something tells me they didn't show this on Nesson. If you watch the NBC broadcast, they threw up a similar graphic. I think we think they missed a few games, but either way, in elimination games with Tuukka Rask, okay? And again, I want to just make sure for the Sensi Boohoo Tuukka crew, I'm not blaming Tuukka, I'm including the team, but these are just outside of Tim Thomas games. And really, it's what it does is eliminate that 2011 season, which does feel like the outlier at this time. But since, and this includes Tuukka's run too now, okay? In front of Tuukka Rask in elimination games, meaning either the Bruins or the opponent could advance, the Bruins, after last night, are now 6-14. Rask has a .280 goals against and an .884 save percentage. Those numbers suck.
Sure they do.
They're not just average. They're not just mediocre. They're not just shaky. They suck. So the Bruins have not been good in this spot. They have not been good with the money on the table. And that sounds weird because they won a cup and they went to game six of a finals. But if you just look historically through the years in these settings, they have a hard time closing out. They have a hard time closing.
It is. In a lot of ways, it's almost more alarming in games five and six than it is in seven. Because you got a team on the ropes, and I go back to game five as the one. You're coming home, you've got a team on the ropes, you're up 3-1, and you can't close. Because you're inviting a loss in game six and then back to game seven.
Certainly are.
Right, so there's no real sense of the moment when that happens. Because you have to understand the magnitude of game five. You have to be able to look at that and say, but yeah, if we blow this, if we blow it tonight, we're back here for a seventh game. In all probability, that's what's going to happen. I know they don't look at it that way, but to me, there's got to be a little bit of that. And so the fact that, you know, 6-14.
6-14 in closeout games since, in front of Tuukka Rask. This goes all the way back to the 2010 playoffs.
I mean, they literally lose 70% of the time.
Starting in that Buffalo series, they missed one closeout game in Buffalo. Then they go three up on Philly and lose four straight closeout games to Philly. We don't need to tell you about that one. The 2013 run, they missed on two closeout games against Toronto. They were up 3-1 against Toronto in that one. Missed two closeout games before winning Game 7. They played the Rangers in the second round that year. We're up 3-0. That was a game. Remember when Tuukka Rask tripped backwards? He fell in the banana peel?
Sure, yes. I remember that. Yep.
Okay. I don't consider that one a blown opportunity. They're up 3-0, and they came back and won here in Game 5. So, you know, no harm, no foul. In Chicago, there was a closeout game, Game 6 here in Boston. They lost it. They lost it after really blowing the big one. There was Game 4 in that series when they lost 6-5 in overtime, I think, with a chance to go up 3-1. So, I mean, just through the years. I mean, you go the last two times they were here, Game 6 against Ottawa last year. Game 6 against Ottawa last year, Tuukka gives up 3 goals on 29 shots. Game 7, home Montreal in 2014, Tuukka gave up 3 goals on 18 shots. 3 goals on 18 shots. So, again, they have not been good in front of Tuukka Rask, and I don't think Rask has been very good in these spots historically. What does that mean for tomorrow night? We'll see. Because they have punched through. Tuukka's punched through. They've punched through, so it's not like it's total abject failure. It's just more often than not they haven't come through in this spot. So I don't know how that you're confident that they can come through in this spot. Maybe they do. I hope they do. And I hope Rask comes through. But historically, this has not been the night for him. This is not where he thrives. But again, maybe this is what you have going for you more than anything else, Bruins fans, and that is you're facing bigger choking pigs than you are. If you could find bigger choking dogs in the NHL than the Bruins, I think you're facing them tonight. You could also say against the Capitals or the Sharks. There's others who are worse. This Leafs team, historically, is one of the few that are worse.
And that's the only thing that makes me feel good right now. Because as much as I've believed in the Bruins up until these last couple of games, especially the third period last night where I had this awful realization of, like, Felger was right. Ah. The only thing that makes me feel good is that the Leafs are just institutional losers. Losers. They'll find a way to gag this way. I have to believe that.
So let's say, and again, I thought the Bruins, I thought it was a bad sign they lost that last regular season game against Florida. If for nothing else than just how they responded to the moment, like that sort of is like, oh, God, don't tell me it's the same old team. The same old team when it comes to this, and that's what scared me about that Florida thing, even more than the matchup, New Jersey versus Tampa, although wouldn't it be nice to be sitting home after beating Tampa or beating New Jersey in five games like Tampa has? The matchup would have helped, but it really just would have been an indication of, you know, digging deep, one game to go, money on the table, come through, I feel confident in you. And they didn't do it. And now here we are, about to gag away another seven-game series with a Game 7 on home ice against a team they should beat. Here we go again, Murray. Are you ready?
Well, and not to get too far ahead, but you're going to see a lot of this team in the coming years, too. Like, if you want to talk about being young and thinking, you know, young and good, they're going to be on the path. Like, as are you. You're going to see a lot of these guys.
Felger and Mazz, the Sports Hub.